Access number 12417, reel 2.
Major Watson, reel 2.
Well, as I said before...
You said you wanted to correct something.
Yes, I did. I should have said I left at school at 16, not 15.
Now, you were just talking about the training at Ringway.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened, after the night balloon, we then carried out our five drops from an old Whitley aircraft, and the most uncomfortable aircraft to jump out, I must say at the time, although we knew nothing better, it was a dark and very smelly aircraft. We had a hole in the centre of the Whitley, and five parachutists sat on one side of the hole, on the forward side, and five on the off side. And we were all huddled together. You couldn't stand up. You had to shuffle along on your bottom. So if anybody was ill through air sickness, well, hard luck, because you couldn't avoid if he wanted to be sick. And it was a great relief when we were told we were coming near to the DZ, when the doors of the hole through the floor, or the aperture through the floor, was open, and what happened, number one would then swing his legs over the hole, and then on the word go, out he will go, then that would be one side. Number two will be watching him. He will then follow, and we all then shuffle along our bottoms, swing it over to the hole, and leap in, and jump in through this hole in the aircraft. It was a great problem there, because unless you pushed yourself off well, there was a tendency of when you went through the hole, your parachute pack will then hit the side of the hole, which then force you forward, and you'll bang your head on the other side of the hole, and it's what we used to call ringing the bell. And there were one or two people who had some bloody noses because they hadn't pushed themselves off. But it was a very uncomfortable aircraft, as far as we were concerned, although that we knew nothing better, so therefore we accepted it. On our last drop, if I remember, we had four containers strapped into the bomb bays. And what happened was that when number five went out, it triggered off the release of these containers. Now, in the containers were our weapons, our rifles, or and the number six used to shout, container, 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 and then go. And sometimes he would probably say it too fast, and suddenly you find number five would be dangling and being caught up with these containers, which is a bit of an uncomfortable experience. The theory was, in those days, was that once you got on the ground, you then turned inwards, the five turning one way and the other, and then you ran towards the centre with the hope you would then pick up your containers, so get your rifles, and from there go into battle. Because of that aircraft, you and also in the containers you used to put your small pack. And really, nine times out of ten, one had a job to find the containers. It was a very primitive situation, but that was where we were at the time. As soon as we completed our training, we were boarded our parachute wings and then went on leave. At that time, my wife was staying in Blackpool with then her two children. Of course, her sister had been given birth to twins, and I then went and joined her in Blackpool. And from there, we went home, back to Lincolnshire. And then, after 2 weeks' leave, I then rejoined the battalion back at Lark Hill. And it was that time then we started to then build up to our operational strength, which was about 500 men. I think by the time we got back, there were about 250 had volunteered. We lost about 25 at all, which I think is a very good record. And then from then onwards, we then started to build up by players to the strength of 500. That is to say, other officers and men, after carrying out their parachute training, were posted to the battalion. I remember our first drop, our ninth drop, was still out of a Whitley from a place called Thruxton Airfield, which is now a race circuit. And then the Dakota, the American C-47, arrived. And this was an absolute joy because, A, you could then stand up. It carried 20 men. We had our bucket seats, but nevertheless, it was a joy to see this aircraft and be able to stand up and then be able to go out through the side door rather than have to shuffle along your bottom to go through a hole in the floor. And obviously, it was a very good and steady and a good operational aircraft. As soon as we were up to our strength of 500, then our training in earnest started. Mainly on exercises on Salisbury Plain, where we denied exercises, night marches, 50-mile route marches. In fact, we went up to 100, obviously in stages, but nevertheless, it was a pretty good hard training. Learning how to carry more equipment, which you needed, because what you've got to remember, that once the parachute is on the ground, he's got no vehicles. He's got to foot it from the DZ to his objective. Sure, later on, one would get a vehicle from the sea, or they came in by landing craft. It was then intensive training. Get to know our men, night exercises, river crossings, and obviously more parachuting as a total team. And by the May that year, we were set, by May 1940, we were certainly a very fit and well-trained battalion, led by a great command officer, Colonel Peter Lillard. And we were certainly thought ourselves jolly fit and ready for anything. In May, we obviously knew that there was something going to happen where we didn't know. But we were all getting rather, I don't say, we were probably getting slightly impatient because we knew things were building up. for a second front. And we were very anxious to know what was going to happen.
So you were keen rather than apprehensive about the second front?
Well, one always must be. But nevertheless, we wanted to get her going. We felt that we'd been training hard enough, and we wanted to show how good we were. In May, we then went to... latter in the May, we went to a transit camp at Bryce Norton, where we were locked in. And by that time, we knew something was happening, and that where we didn't know. We could see, it was a big Nissen hut, if I remember right, in the camp, and it had on it briefing room. And they were all anxious to know what was going on in that briefing room. And we could see our commanding officer, and eventually our company commanders, going in there. But I was then a young subaltern. And my men used to say to me, well, you know, what's going on? When are we going to be told what we're going to do? We knew that we were going to go somewhere, but we didn't know. And eventually, we were then told that by my company commander that we were going to be briefed what was going to happen. And it didn't happen until early June, just before D-Day, which was, as you know, the 6th of June. Then it all came clear to us what was going to happen. There were wonderful models there of where we were going to drop, and also air photographs. And we spent all our time studying these air photographs, being briefed on the model, what our job was going to do, what it was going to be.
What was that?
The 13th Battalion, our task was to drop just north of a place called Rombold and capture this village, which we knew had a German headquarters. But I'd like to come back to that in a minute and see what actually a full task was as a company. In general terms, it was the 13th Battalion, together with the 12th and 7th Battalion, which was in the brigade, to secure vital areas in the area of Romville and the Orne and Orne Canal. And nevertheless, during this period, before D-Day, we were spent all our time in this briefing room, as much as we could, studying these photographs. In fact, you could pretty well say, well, I know where that tree is, I know where that's going to be. Studying the Romilly itself, looking at the church, which had a spire, which had a tower away from the church, and we were going to use that as our focus point on our way to the rendezvous. By the 4th of June, I think we all knew exactly what our task was, right down to the second level, or to the man level. Individually, they knew exactly what we had to do. We then went to a place called Broadwell, where all our aircraft were sitting to fit our chutes. And then we came back into the transit camp. We were due to take off on the night of the 4th, but this was postponed for 24 hours because of the weather conditions in the channel. And eventually the time came when we, which was the day of the 5th, and the evening of the 5th, where we all assembled as a battalion in this transit camp, with blackened faces, when our padre, Whitfield Foy, conducted a service where we sang hymns, and thinking that what was going to be like this time next day. One was quite apprehensive about how we were going to be received when we got the other side. I think you were jumping, what I could say, into what we say with the unknown. We had an idea what about the defences, who were there, but we just wondered what the reaction was going to be when we got there. At about 11:30 hours, at about 10 o'clock, we then moved out of the transit camp to the airfield, where we fitted our chutes. And then, with my platoon headquarters and one of my and a section, my platoon with the other aircraft, we then emplaned and took off at about 11:30 that evening on the 5th of June.
What did you say your company was?
A Company. I was command number 3 platoon of A Company of the 13th Battalion. We then took off at 11:30 and headed towards France. I had a very good batman called Harry Gospel, who was a Cockney, and he was certainly a very cheerful man. And we started to sing in the aircraft various Cockney songs and so on.
What kind of Cockney songs?
Well, I can't really remember, but they were. I don't know. I can't remember really, but it was fun. But as we got near the coast, we were told to stand up. By the dispatcher, the Royal Air Force dispatcher. As I was standing at the door, I could see below me ships heading towards the coast. And I looking towards the Havre area, I could see explosions, flames everywhere, and obviously we were bombing that area. I think both of us then went very, very, very quiet. I think all of us were wondering, as we crossed the French coast, what our reception is going to be.
What were you equipped with personally?
I had with me, I had a leg kit bag, and in it was my small pack and my stain gun. What I would like to do, if it's all right with you.
Yes.
Is to tell you what I'd actually put down, what actually happened to me. And if I may go back again and make it and more or less make clear to you what I was doing and what my job was. I was a platoon commander of A Company, the 13th Lancashire Parabattalion. At the time of the assault into Normandy, and like the rest of the battalion, were wondering what was in store for us whilst waiting for the takeoff. But with our battalion motto, "Win or Die," because we were a Lancashire battalion, and that was our our motto, win or die, I'm sure we were ready for everything. Whatever was going to be faces when we got there. Now, the task of the battalion was to clear and hold Romville and set up an outpost position at a place called Ouvelette and defend the road from the east and clear lanes through the anti-tank obstacles on the DZ for the arrival of the advanced division headquarters at 03:20 hours by glider. At the time we were coming over the coast of France, I can't remember any flak because we passed over a battery called the Merville Battery, which was going to be objective of one of the by the 9th Para Battalion. But so there was no evasion by the. By the pilot, so he brought us in straight and true. And at 12:50 hours, I left the aircraft. And I was delighted to see that my parachute had opened. And I obviously, once I got out, I then wondered on the way down how the rest of my stick was faring on the way down onto the ground. This kit bag I had on my leg had a quick release pin, and this jammed, and I couldn't release it. And at that time, I don't think I was really worried what was on the ground, who is going to receive me, what the reception is going to be like. All I was concerned was this kit bag, which I couldn't get off. And I thought to myself, if I break my leg at this stage, it will sink all the training I've done and how I've been worked up for this operation. If I break my leg and find myself I'm back into a been evacuated, I'd be bloody annoyed. But fortunately enough, my drift was all right, and I landed without any injury at all. In fact, I actually landed in an orchard at the north end of the dropping zone. And at the time, I thought, had I landed in the wrong place? For a moment, I was on my own, and I thought to myself, what has happened to my rest of my stick? But within, it seemed ages, but suddenly I heard a voice, which was one of my section commanders, saying, "Are you all right, sir?" I said, "Yes, how about you?" I said, "No, I'm fine." And we looked up, saw the line of the aircraft, which gave us a direction to get to our RV, which was the church tower in Romville. We together started moving in the direction of the aircraft. It was a dark night, but it was sufficient light for both of us to see the tower in the distance. And as we ran forward, we started picking up men. Eventually, I saw quite a few other members of my platoon, and we then moved forward in a battle group, running towards the to the RV near the church. The company commander, the CO and the company commanders had hunting horns. Peter Lord was very much a farmer and a hunting man, and he was decided that hunting horn was the thing to rally the troops, especially at night. So he equipped himself with his hunting horn and gave one each to the company commanders. He was to blow L for Lancashire and A for Able and so on. And as I was nearing the RV, I could hear my company commander, a chap called Major Cramphorn, blowing A for Able, and we homed in on him at the RV near the church. One must remember, it was a night operation, and no matter how well you're trained, there's always confusion in the early stages, with men coming from all directions. In fact, because the disease that we were using, both the other two parish battalions, the 7th and the 12th, used the same DZ. And in the early stages, we found men from the 7th Battalion in the wrong RV, in our RV by mistake, and also the 12th Battalion. In fact, because of the Pathfinders who came in early before us, one of the team had dropped on our DZ by mistake with a Eureka beacon, which was actually destined for the DZ to be used by the 8th Battalion. And in fact, some of the 8th Battalion also joined us at the RV. It was many ways quite funny, because as the men came in, so we said, what company? A company. Are you B? What company? B company. Over there. What company? A company. And eventually somebody then said to me, is this A company, the 8th Battalion? Which he was quite...